are here to talk, believe it or not, Jess Franco. But we do have a special guest today, and this is going to be an episode focusing on our upcoming shows in New York, beginning in 5 days from now. So we want to welcome to the podcast, let's see, I'll try to remember all the different things you do, but let's see, film historian, works in film preservation, film programmer, podcaster, writer, probably other things I can't remember right now, but welcome to the show, Liz Purchell.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Did I miss anything? There's more, right?
There's probably more, but I keep it simple. I normally just say queer film historian and programmer.
Yeah.
It's all-encompassing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We're not ones for modesty around here. We like to give the whole CV. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's right. We got some shows coming up. Let's get those dates right off.
We got August 7th. Liz was kind enough to invite us to join for her Weird Wednesday series at the Alamo Drafthouse Brooklyn. We'll be showing She Killed in Ecstasy. And then Liz also volunteers at the Spectacle Theater, also in Brooklyn. And we all got together and came up with the idea to do a nearly 15-hour blind Jess Franco marathon on August 10th.
Yes. No, this should be this is the unthinkable, but we're all making happen the thing that everyone says you should do. Sit down and watch 15 straight hours of Jess Franco.
I mean, if we were truly smart, we'd be doing this kind of in line with the old, I think they were called the torture garden screenings that Kayla Janice used to do, where the longer you stay, the less you have to pay to get out. So it's free to get in. And then if you leave immediately, you pay more than you would if you stayed the entire time. So hopefully people will come to this and stick around the entire time for the low, low cost of $25.
Yeah.
So this is a episode. And in New York, that's cheaper than a slice of pizza. Prices have gone up.
Yep. We'll return and talk a little more about both of those shows, but today, since we have a guest who is a fellow lover of Jess Franco, we are just going to run through a couple things about Liz's history with Franco. So where did it begin for you? And, you know, like literally the beginning, but then also where it kind of finally locked in, you know, as we say, the tuning fork when it finally hit.
I mean, for me, I think I'd always heard about Jess Franco in like a very negative way. This was kind of, I think the first film of his I ever saw was Vampiros Lesbos, and that was in October 2016, according to Letterboxd. This was right around the time that I was really starting to get into kind of like the boutique Blu-ray world. There was a video store that opened up in Tampa, Florida, where I lived, called Grindhouse Video, which is still around. I think they're now in Tennessee or somewhere. They keep getting bigger and bigger. And like having a local store where I could go to buy this stuff was kind of like a game changer for me. And it kind of really helped develop a lot of my tastes. So I think I saw Vampiros Lesbos first, the easy gateway in, and I loved it. And I just started watching what was available on Blu-ray. So that She Killed in Ecstasy, Eugenie, the story of her journey into perversion, Justine. And then... you know, I was watching those movies, I loved them all, and then I picked up this double feature of Silence from the Tomb and The Sinister Eyes of Dr. Orloff, and that I just ground to a halt, and after that I was like, you know, I think I'm good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go
ahead.
That's the Candyland pitfall going around. You step into the licorice muck and you gotta go back to the start. Yeah. No one would fault anyone to stop at those two.
So I just kind of stopped. And then I think this was right around the same time that Stephen Thrower's first book came out. And I got that. And also, I think it was Mondo Macabro released a double or triple feature with Countess Perverse and How to Seduce a Virgin.
Now there's a double.
And I think Countess Perverse was the one that really just like fully made it click for me. There was something about that movie that just, the soundtrack was incredible. It's genuinely erotic. It's extremely kinky and perverted and weird. And I don't know, like, that was kind of the one that really, like, got me to, like, just really go all in. And then that combined with having this book that I could kind of go back to, A, to find titles to watch, but B, to, like, you know, watch a movie and then go to the book and read everything about the movie, read about the different versions of the movie, read about the way it was made and all this stuff. I really kind of got hooked. And then I started watching all these movies. I was really into them. And then I got a big eBay lot of the, what were the class S?
Classificata S, was it the Goya ones?
I got an eBay lot of the Goya Blu-ray. Yeah. And that is when I just stopped again, because I started watching some of those in order. And after seeing, what is it, like, White Skin on Black Flesh or something like that? Or
White Skin, Black Thighs.
Yeah. White Skin, Black Thighs, or Mondo Erotico, or Girls in the Night Traffic. And that was when it, like, fully, like, hit the brakes again. And then right around the same time, I moved from Tampa to Austin, which I think is kind of the ground zero for the Jess Franco revival in America in a lot of ways, thanks to people like Lars Nilsson and his Weird Wednesday programming in the early 2000s, and, you know, bringing Jess Franco and Lena Romay out to Fantastic Fest to, you know, have, like, a Lifetime Achievement Award. Having access to the Vulcan Video and I Love Video catalogs, which were full of Jess Franco films, are really what reignited it for me. And then I was just diving deep into those catalogs. And at last count, I have seen 61 Jess Franco films, which I think is a pretty respectable number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Better than most people we have come on to talk about Jess for the 100th time. So you're in the upper echelons.
Good, good, good. Like, there's a lot that I still want to see. I just have not had the motivation to actually see them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for these, like, with Jess Franco, it's like you kind of have to really kind of get into his obsessions and, like, his kind of fixations and the things that he does in his films. And, like, once you kind of start recognizing the patterns, I think the excitement is in seeing the ways that he keeps changing these things up and filtering them through different genres and different actors and different periods and different locations. And, I mean, those kinds of filmmakers who are, like, true, like, auteurs are, I think, my favorite kinds of filmmakers, because you keep seeing these same themes replay themselves out over and over and over again in different ways. That's why I love Werner Fassbinder. That's why I love Rosa von Praunheim. That's why I love, you know, filmmakers like that, where they're basically making the same movie over and over and over again, but doing it in different and new ways.
I mean, and that's probably the joy of coming, like you said, you'd see stuff like She Killed in Ecstasy before. Then when you come to Countess Perverse, there's that dang weird house again. There's mm-hmm. that same shoreline. And those are those moments that do kind of, like, punctuate, where you're like, oh, is there, it's more than him just repeating the same locations. Like, there's a genuine, you know, there's something he found genuinely kind of spiritually, in a cinematic way, moving about these locations. I think he has one of the best eye for locations when they let him choose them.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, because, like, the reason why I like filmmakers like Doris Wishman is because they're so resourceful in using their apartment for all their locations. Jess Franco, I guess it's kind of the same way, except he actually had a little bit of money and could go to all these, like, scenic locations.
Yep. Well, until we get to his SOV period, and then he also decided to shoot things in his apartment.
Yeah. Or, you know, if not, then whatever hotel room he was staying in. I do wonder, like, if he had an agreement with all these, like, hotels, like, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to move shit around. And then I'm going to, yeah, like, did he sleep in the sets? Did he have the energy to move stuff back at the end of the night?
I don't think so. I very much imagine that, like, whoever it was at the time, whether it's, like, Golden Films or if it's their own, like, Manicoa shit, they probably got enough money for a hotel room for everyone to fit in. And we're like, that's just the set. And that's where we sleep. That's where we live for a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, that is a testament to his ability to wring so much out of so little. I think when we were chatting with Brett the other day, he asked the question, and I kind of put it in a way, not directly answering what he was asking, but it was, well, when Jess has very little budget, what do you expect from those kinds of things? Do you expect that it's going to be one single takes? Like, what kind of, you know, quick shortcuts is he going to use that people might notice, oh, he's kind of phoning this in? And I think I couldn't answer that because I can't think of anything that he does for that. I mean, other than films, maybe like, oh, what are those Dietrich films where they're all on that one set and it's just the same bamboo wall and like a house plant, Satan's Slave, stuff in that. Maybe that I could understand. He's really not using the breadth of his imagination. But when he's on those low budgets, I can't really identify him using shortcuts, like, unless you consider the Zoom a shortcut. But I think Jess kind of, in his own way, made the Zoom his own.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say the Zoom, but like for him, it is such it's an extension of his own eye, which I think is, you know, what makes it so fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the other thing that kind of really like locked me into his films was when I started actually seeing the stuff he was doing with Lena Romay and just there being this kind of palpable love for her from him through the camera work that he's doing in the films is, I think, something that I found really kind of profound and touching. Like Female Vampire was another like big early one for me and another one that I don't think people talk about enough.
Yeah. And I wonder why that one, you'd think that one would have its Blu-ray release sooner than later. Cause I know there was the one that came out, the Redemption line, but you know, that was kind of the issue with a lot of those things, but even the Jean Rollin ones, I mean, I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but when I was younger, I really did not want to watch Female Vampire because of that garish sci-fi channel kind of cover it has. Like they made them look so cheap, but then you see how beautiful they are and they're not blood soaked, you know, gross, you know, low budget fest. You really see that there's this dark poetry at play, especially in something like Female Vampire.
I don't know. Erotic Kill is a pretty great title.
Oh, Erotic Kill is, well, if they want to call it Erotic Kill, great. If you want to call it The Bare Breasted Countess, even better.
Oh, so good. I agree, though. And I think that's a great way into Jess Franco, too, that I don't think people talk about enough is what you said, the true love these two have for each other, because as people think I'm joking often when I say it, but like, it's truly one of the most romantic pairings like in film for me, the way those two work together and what they want to do for each other and with each other. It's so fucking sweet.
I mean, I will say that it is a film series that I've always wanted to do is Wife Guys.
Is it? Yeah.
Get some Paul Douglas Anderson in there, get some John Mortsugu in there.
Blake Edwards, yeah, all Wife Guys. If there's anything we love here at Oscar Bait, we love supporting people who love their wives. So, he's the ultimate wife guy. And I think like that's what's so interesting is with a lot of filmmakers, maybe when they put their partners in there, they sometimes they're like kind of, like, all right, let's take, for example, someone like Von Sternberg and Dietrich. Like, they work together a lot, but you could make the case that she embodies the idealization of his cinematic scream queen, or not scream queen, but, you know, film queen. Like, this is, I'm sculpting you in the manner I want to sculpt you, and we're going to work together, and it's going to be transcendent. With Jess and Lena, he's like, I will do a little bit, but I'm going to capture both like how innocent you are, how sweet you are, how funny you are, and how animalistic you can look at times. Mm-hmm. That's rare for a lot of people. He seemed to completely embrace whatever she wanted to do on screen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will, do you have a thought on that?
Oh, no, I'm just getting lost in the sauce thinking about it because it's so romantic. I just love those two.
You have a favorite, Liz, of their collabs? Like what would you say is their most where do you see this on-screen chemistry between him behind the camera and her in front the most?
I have a Letterboxd list that I was keeping while I was watching all these movies, which is like my like vague ranking. And I think the highest one on there with her is Female Vampire, which is 7th or 8th. I think 7th. So like, I mean, here's my top 10, which
I was going to say, let's just do
probably a pretty basic top 10 and like would probably change like now if I was like rewatching a lot of this stuff. But top 10, Venus and Furs, Vampiros Lesbos, Diabolical Dr. Z, Bloody Moon, Countess Perverse, Erotic Rites of Frankenstein, Female Vampire, Virgin Among the Living Dead, Eugenie Desaad, and She Killed in Ecstasy.
I mean, only heat.
I guess there's not much to debate there.
That's like, yeah, a lot of these are 60s and early 70s. And like, I love a lot of the later stuff. It's just I haven't seen a lot of that stuff in a long time. And I think now, like, with all the stuff I've done over the past couple of years, I feel like I would be a lot more forgiving and welcoming to a lot of the, you know, maybe more drony, slow cinema films of his.
We've always said slow cinema did not start with Hou Hsiao-hsien or whoever you all like to think. It's just Franco.
It starts with Shannon Sets. That's where it began.
Yeah. Take Taiwan out of your mouth, put Spain in there. Okay. This guy, I mean, it is like, and we're being facetious and stupid, but like, there is something there, especially in those films, that I do think is more art house leaning. Like, are you a fan of Shining Sex?
I've never seen it.
Okay. So there's a perfect example of like, especially how much you like Female Vampire. That one I think will really flip a switch, because where he's going with that one, I think, is a perfect example of what encapsulates all of his cinema. So, mm-hmm. You know, you can, listeners, you can be like Liz, you can have 61 under your belt and think, I think I can stop here, but you don't have to. There's so much left. There's so much more nectar left in that fucking flower, you know?
But I mean, I think for me, the thing I'll say is that like watching this stuff at home, I don't like watching this stuff at home. Like, yeah. I don't like watching these slower films because I really have trouble concentrating. I have ADHD. It's just, I would rather see these in a theater like they were originally meant to be shown, even though I doubt any venues would ever show Shining Sex or, I don't know, Sexual Story of O or Night of a Thousand Desires or whatever.
They didn't play.
Yeah.
I'll play that much. They did not play long when they came out. So that's the... So you did get to see them. I mean, that is... Those audience members must be rarer than hen's teeth to be alive today, because, like, you know, they play at an adult cinema for maybe 2 to 3 weeks. People who were there didn't quite see what made them erotic, and they're not exactly for the trench coat crowd, so they'd just be dumped. And a lot of them even went missing, like the one we talk a lot about, Julietta 69, one of the very first films. Well, I mean, not the first, but he shot it around Midnight Party and Shining Sex, and it's supposedly another one of his Desaad films, but like gets closer supposedly to something like Jay Brulee Day Part 2, one of those darker, just like there's no humor to be found in this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's gone. But it played in theaters, so people did see it, but no one has record of it.
I mean, I would say that 2 or 3 weeks is actually a pretty good runtime for an adult film. Like, a lot of gay porn theaters would have new films every single week, which is kind of insane to think about.
Yeah, but this is opening in like just Brussels.
Yeah.
And it's like one theater, and it's like, and it's gone.
Yeah.
We'll see. Hopefully more get discovered over the years. Because they're, I mean, you've read the Soror books. Some of the ones that we cannot see still are very enticing.
I mean, the one that I'm like perversely fascinated by is his AIDS horror movie.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. When we got to that, we lost our fucking minds. Really, no. Why does that have to be gone? Can't we trade something like White Skin, Black Thighs and get this back?
Boy. Yeah, I would like to make a deal with God, you know, like, and just like, here, let me trade these out. There's
yeah, you can like take back, what is it, Amazon Temple Legends? Is that the correct title, John?
Oh yeah, you can toss Diamonds of Kilimanjaro right in there, you know.
Give us the lost ones.
It is, yeah, you do wonder about some of these companies who do put these out on Blu-ray, and it's like, are you just trying to bank off of it being Jess Franco's name? Because if so, that's a risky endeavor.
But oh, it works though. It works.
Yeah, but then people get Diamonds of Kilimanjaro home and they're gonna wrap it from their little Amazon box and they're like, I can't wait. And then they're like, the fuck is this shit? And like we always say, it's the ones that suck do have usually one or two scenes of redeeming value, but like that's for heads. That's for sick fucks who've decided to do a show like us and cover them all. So it's like, we can never convince people on that. But the good thing is there's plenty. There's plenty to go through. Without giving any titles away, what are you excited to see in this 15-hour marathon that we all put together?
Well, there are two films I haven't seen. So I'm going to say that.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just excited to kind of see all these back to back and with a crowd. In, you know, I love spectacle. I've been programming there on and off. I've, you know, done a couple of programs there over the past couple of years. I started volunteering there this February. I moved here in December, and it's one of my favorite places on earth. And it's a place that honestly just feels like a home to me. And I love that we should not exist. We are a 35 seat micro cinema in Williamsburg that shows movies for $5 every single day of the year, and crowds always come out. Like, I've been doing booth shifts for, you know, a good chunk of this year, and I have yet to have a show that no one has come to. There's always at least a couple people, and it's people who are so engaged and excited and just like happy that we exist and that we're doing what we do, and that, you know, this kind of like really deep cut programming still exists. So I think doing something as stupid as a 15-hour Jess Franco marathon at Spectacle is just kind of perfect. And for me, like, also, like, I just love the curation and all the work that went into putting this together. I loved that kind of our initial idea was to start with something that was, like, super accessible and easy, and then over the course of the 15 hours just get to, like, true heroin kind of stuff. And I don't know if it's as demented as I originally thought it as.
Yeah,
I think pretty accessible all the way through, but I think it'll be a fun thing, and I think people who come out will have an interesting time. A good time, but an interesting time.
Yeah.
We're speed running you through a Jess Franco experience. So as much as grueling as this might seem to someone out there questioning if they want to click that ticket, we're cutting you to the front of the line, okay? 15 hours, that's in the scope of the infinite space of time. That's 15 minutes, baby. That's 15. That's a drop in the bucket to run you through this many films and give you the experience of seeing them all run together.
But the thing I'll say too is that, you know, kind of in keeping with, you know, the stuff that I have seen, we're only showing one film from the 80s. The rest is from the 60s or the early to mid 70s. So it is all very technically early, Jess Franco. So it's not, you're not really getting a full overview. You're getting a good overview of like the first chunk of his career, basically.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's probably because we're all thinking that, like, for the uninitiated, like you were saying with your experience, Liz, like that's probably the best place to start to get hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way those films look, the music, it's all very sumptuous. And I think it's an easy serve to a lot of people who might be curious. But hey, if it's a hit, 80s 15 hour, we'll do the 80s, the 90s.
Oh yeah. And we're also, just if anyone is curious, because we have mentioned a bunch in marketing and stuff, how, you know, there's a very rare chance to see all of these, yes, because obviously not a lot of people show Jess Franco movies in theaters. But there is one movie in this marathon that if it did ever play in a theater, it did when they first finished making it, and then that's it, and pretty safe bet it never will again. So this is a very, very rare chance to probably be the first people on Earth to watch it in a movie.
Well, I will say something that I just remembered. Last week, we had Frank Henenlotter come out to Weird Wednesday for a screening of his film Bat Biology. And we were talking about Jess Franco after the screening. And we mentioned, we were talking about the lineup, and I mentioned the title of this film. And he got so excited and was telling me about how he has a VHS copy of the movie and how he like had to like hand dub it so he could send it to Stephen Thrower to watch. And how that was like a movie that was really key to Thrower.
That's
of like
where that's from?
Really getting into this. So
I guess he's responsible. I guess he's responsible for us watching it too.
Oh well, my God.
Thanks, Mr. Henenlotter.
Wow, of course. Of fucking course it was him. I love how much like Henenlotter and fucking Donald Farmer kept the Franco train going. Well, I just saw Donald Farmer just posted again something yesterday. Jess Franco gifted him this, like, I don't think it was ever published, but it's a book of his entire filmography with all the details and shit in perfect order that he gifted to Donald Farmer, which I assume, you know, Thrower probably worked off that as well, but I just love that those two kept just going. Shit, we got to talk to Frank about that movie then.
And Frank was saying that the reason why he loves Jess Franco so much is that the movies are all real movies. They're all shot in scope. They're beautifully made. They're all played in theaters. They're not, you know, they may be cheap and quick, but at the same time, they are very well-made films.
Bless
they're real films.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah. And, you know, it's easy why people, I mean, it's been an easy fruit, the lowest hanging fruit possible, to point out and say why Jess doesn't fit the boxes of how a normal filmmaker, quote unquote, normal makes their films. But, you know, what we're going to show you also in this series is going to have some pretty glaring examples of, like, if you want to see it, what he does with, quote unquote, a normal production, you know, he can do that too. He was just wasn't interested in that. So let's just real quick here. I'm pulling up the schedule here.
I was going to say, please, if you want to read, Liz wrote wonderful, wonderful little teases for each of the movies. If you want to run through those, John.
Yeah, let's run through these here. We're taking you through a whole day. You get the spectacle. You've got your little egg and bacon cheese from the corner. You're coming over. It's time to start the day. It's 11 a.m. We're going to start in 1969. And these are all Liz's words here. One of Franco's adaptations of the works of Sax Rohmer. One. And if you're an intrepid listener of this show, start now. Start digging through all the episodes and start figuring out what these are.
Or just come in and be surprised is what I would say.
Yeah. Or, yeah, if you do that, don't tell anyone. Don't go online and explain that to anyone. And also, I'd be impressed if you figure these out, too. If
someone figured all of these out, I will figure out how to get $100 to give them.
Yeah. Get a pat on the back from me. 1 p.m., a film from 1970, one of his West German-Spanish co-productions, and one of Franco's many, many adaptations of the work of the Marquis de Sade. At 3 p.m., 1971, another one of the German-Spain co-productions, and this is one of his best-known works. What could that one be?
Maybe it's going to be fucking Diamonds of Kilimanjaro. You don't know.
I think it's Girls in the Night Traffic, actually.
It's Girls in the Night Traffic. It's more fun to think of programming this with stuff like Girls in the Night Traffic and Sperm Party. Let's get all those, all those in there. Okay, it's the best known one from that was at 3 p.m. has gone. Now it's 5 p.m., 1973. This is a French and Portuguese co-production. And this is one of his many takes on the Universal Monsters, One I know we are all very excited to see on the big screen. 6:45, we're hopping back to 1966 with one of his many semi-remakes of his breakout film. And a film that, well, if you're thinking about coming to Weird Wednesdays, has a very beautiful connection with She Killed in Ecstasy. So complete the puzzle that way. At 8:30 p.m., 1976, one of Franco's other semi-remakes of his breakout film. What could it be? 10:30 p.m., 1983, Franco's own semi-remake of another film in the marathon. Figuring this out, we got an auteur what we're dealing with here, folks. And then at midnight. If you think you've seen them all, 1974, we wrap up with Franco's obscure and rarely seen sequel to another film in the marathon. That's a hell of a day and evening right there to give you the experience in the most phantasmagoric way possible. It's kaleidoscopic. Seeing these in the dark, in a theater, in the daytime, there's no better experience. Leave the shrooms at home, folks, because this is gonna...
True, you don't need drugs when you're watching this much Franco in a row. Probably avoid it, honestly. I would say I personally not take psychedelics and try to do this.
I wouldn't want to do one of these while I'm tripping. Not to say that much.
I mean, I will say one of the things, one of the biggest selling points for all this that we did not mention is that Spectacle has air conditioning. And the weather in New York has been just disgusting for the past couple months and is only seems to be getting worse. So
that is great news.
AC.
Oh, that's great news as well, because I had just warned John because I thought it was out again. I think it was one of Will Sloan shows, River Beast, maybe, I think, where the air went out or something. But it was funny because the reviews were just positive. They were like, got to fucking sweat with everybody watching Don't Let the River Bees Get You. But I'm very happy the AC is running. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Because this is, you know, there's some sexy stuff in these too. So we don't need any extra heat.
You're going to be hallucinating enough anyway. You don't need dehydration to add to that. So, So there you go. Summer in New York. It's hot. Come beat the heat. You can be indoors. You can save on your window unit. Your energy bill will be lower because you spent the whole day with us,
and you will definitely be in a room with only all of the coolest people in New York. So
yeah, that's probably, I mean, that has to be true. That has to be true. If you were maybe thinking of going across town to another theater to see another podcast movies, maybe don't, because you've probably seen that at least 5 or 6 times. So come to the ones you've never seen before. That podcast will always be around, just remember that.
And as always, we will be, you know, since our bud Severin helping with all these things, we'll be selling lots of more Franco films that are not in this marathon too, some of them, but a lot more Franco films we'll be selling in the lobby. So hit us up. We'll be doing that all 15 hours as well before we leave. Because I think we're our flight is at like 7 a.m. So we're finishing and going straight to the airport.
I will say Spectacle does not have a lobby.
Whatever.
We'll figure it out. We'll sell it out of a van. We'll
have to buy everything at Alamo a few days before. And then maybe we'll have like 2 or 3 Blu-rays left at Spectacle.
Yeah, we'll just hold them as people walk in. Yeah.
We need to bring a car and we can do it out of the trunk of the car, maybe.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Or I'll get a trench coat and I'll line it with jet.
That would be appropriate. But yeah, it's going to be amazing. And yeah, as we said on the 7th before that, we'll be doing She Killed in Ecstasy. We've talked about that movie a lot, of course, and we love it. But what is special about that one for you? Why are you excited for that one to be in the Weird Wednesday lineup?
Well, I was excited to show up for Weird Wednesday because A, it never plays. Mm-hmm. B, it's a Soledad Miranda film. C, it's got an incredible soundtrack. Yep. And like I feel like it's kind of like on the border of like being for humans and not being for humans.
It's true.
I've really enjoyed doing Weird Wednesday at Alamo in Brooklyn for most of this year. And that's because it's kind of it's an interesting kind of programming in that you want to go out as far out there as you can, but it is an Alamo draft house. So it's, you know, people are going to be eating hot dogs and cheeseburgers and stuff like that while they're watching, you know, the Jaws porn parody Gums in 35 millimeter or whatever. So I felt like this one was like almost as far as we could take it without like tipping a little too far into like not a good time.
Sure. Yeah, and because I probably would have gotten upset if we were showing something like Shining Sex and everyone's eating. I'd be like, shut up. I don't want to fucking hear you chew right now. This is serious.
I will say that, like, I am very excited about it because, you know, last month, July, you know, was kind of the reopening of the Alamo Brooklyn because it just went through a big remodel. And like I was wanting to do kind of like a hot summer kind of thing anyway. So it was like, let's do the most bizarre, weird sex movies I could do. And I went really all in. We showed Gums in 35 millimeter. We showed the New York Ripper. We showed Paul Verhoeven's The Fourth Man. We showed Bad Biology. And then we did a work in progress screening of a new preservation of Doris Wishman's Dildo Heaven that I'm working on. And all of those shows sold out and did incredibly well and like were really well attended and people were just really into them and having a good time. So I like to be proven wrong. I like that people want to see weird, horny movies, even though like I think some people think that no one wants to see sex in a film. So,
yeah. Well, for our people, our fans out there that love a good revenge movie, this is one of the few Jess Franco revenge films, along with maybe Venus in Furs or, well, what would have been Julietta 69. We've had a revenge element. So I think when you said a hot summer, I mean, this is one of the few that I can feel the heat coming off those un-air-conditioned hotel rooms that he's shooting in. So, yeah, there's a palpable seaside summer vibe in this movie. Just seaside summer bliss, if we're going to be honest. Just, you know, sharing a bed with your dead husband, plotting to kill his
weird eugenics plot device.
Yes.
Lots of weird stuff going on in this movie. And yeah. I don't know. Soledad Miranda is gorgeous. And it's got I love the soundtrack. And I don't know. It'll be fun. I haven't seen it since May 12th, 2017. So I'm excited to revisit it.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it in a theater. I'm very excited. And for you Jess heads, we get Howard Vernon, Paul Mueller, Ava Stromberg. Even more.
All the hitters. All the heavy hitters.
And of course, yeah. Soledad, and I won't spoil the moment, but outside of Jess and Lena, there's an interaction between Soledad and Jess in this movie that is one of my favorite moments of Jess on screen.
I think it was Jess's favorite moment of being on screen, too.
I think you're right.
I mean, I think the thing I'm excited for, too, is just to get to see another Jess Franco film in a theater. I programmed Vampiros Lesbos for my queer series at Austin Film Society 2 years ago, I think, for Halloween. And I unfortunately had to be out of town, but I heard that they were the highest grossing screenings at the theater that week, which is incredible. Because I think some people at the theater thought that no one was going to want to see that in a, you know, in a theatrical context. And I'm glad I was able to prove them wrong. I did a 35 millimeter screening of Venus in Furs in Austin for Weird Wednesday last November, I think. And that was the first time I ever saw a Jess Franco film in a theater. And it just played so well. And the print looked really beautiful. And yeah, so I'm just excited to see more, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Us too. It's we're doing our best to spread the gospel, but selfishly, we also just want to see Jess Franco movies on big screens that are not in our bedrooms.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this marathon is a great excuse to see a lot of the ones that has been kind of difficult for us to place in other cities' programming schedules. So there's a few on there that are going to be an absolute treat to get to see on the big screen. The first one especially, what a way to kick it off. That, and there's a perfect example of a movie that I liked, but then I saw it again and it was like, no, this is really top tier Jess at this time. So
yeah. So all right. Things. We will see you on the 7th, and then we will also see you on the 10th. Just cancel anything else you had planned, including work, whatever it may be. Just swim in Franco with us for those 2 days.
And if you come to Spectacle, you want to come chat with us, we would love uppers of any kind. Like I said, we are not sleeping. We are going to hit that flight right after the marathon. So whatever you want to do to help keep us awake to get to the airport, we'll hook it up. We'll figure out a way to pay you back.
Yeah, we'll trade you one of the Jess Franco cigarettes.
Yeah, but
wait, second, have you seen these, Liz?
I have seen them.
Yeah, it's my favorite. I'm not necessarily a merch person very often, but that one I was thinking that's an action figure I can get behind.
All right. Well, until then, folks, you know the dates. You know where to be when you're in New York. Be there. We'll see you there. Liz, thanks for coming on and adding some new words to something we feel like we might have beaten a dead horse on this show. So truly appreciate for you coming by.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me. I'm excited for these shows.
Oh, it's going to be great. And then someday you come back on again when we maybe put together a highs and lows in the future together.
It'll be a fun one. I keep saying it. So.
No, and we like it, and we would love to. We want to keep it.
Next time, that's what I was saying before you got here, John. Like next time we're in New York, that's a perfect. Like, I think we could. We'll convince another theater to invite us all in for a double feature to end them all.
Don't be like one of these Midwest theaters that can't handle our presence. Hire this program somewhere else.
Well, thank you, Liz. We'll see you in person soon.
Yeah, see you next week.